This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome to the latest pay-per-view reaction show. Here on Place to Be Nation, I'm Will. I'm here with my buddy Chris, who does the weekly Lucha Report. I'm here with my co-host Charles from Wrestling with the Past. We haven't done a show, but we're going to do some in the near future. Promise, right, Charles? Promise.
Pinky swear.
Pinky swear. There you go. We got our good friend from the Wrestling Culture Podcast, Dylan. And Dylan, you just put up a podcast yesterday, right?
Actually, early this morning, really, really early this morning, it went up on a counterfactual podcast. Charles's favorite topic, if not Bob Backlund, who? So.
Awesome. Well, guys, tonight we had a pay-per-view that's guaranteed to increase subscribers to the network. Because I think that was their goal, is to make people happy to want to subscribe to this thing. So let's start with the pre-show. Adam Rose versus Fandango. Chris, what do you think about this pre-show match?
I really wasn't much of a match. All they were worried about was the Taylor and Summer Rae and around the ringside with the Rosebud and Fandango being all pissed off about it, and led to Adam just beating him. That was basically all it was. And Layla and Summer dancing around, kissing Adam Rose. So that's all the match was. Nothing special.
Okay, nothing special. Dylan, did you think there was anything special about this?
This went, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes. It pretty much was exactly as Chris described it. It was not long enough to be as bad as most of the matches on this horrible card. But it wasn't really even a match. I don't even know if you could call it a match. It seemed to me like they were really trying, like the whole focus was just, hey, look, Summer Rae and Layla are hanging out with Adam Rose, which, unless they're doing some angle where these guys, end up involved like in a Party Monster style murder scene and Macaulay Culkin comes in, then I really like, I have no interest in any of this horseshit. So
funny. Hey, if any of y'all are...
You can throw this on the wood pile, Williams.
If any of you have your computer turned up, turn it down, please. I'm getting some weird feedback going on. Awesome. Charles, do you have anything to add?
This was the only match that I actually missed from the pregame or the pay-per-view proper, so I'm going to use my time to complain about something else on the pre-show. I understand, even though I don't really agree with it, I understand them feeling the need philosophically or just practically to script their pay-per-views and to script their television shows. But the degree to which they script their pre-shows is so obvious, and it drives me crazy. Like, would the world just stop spinning if two people on the panel had the same prediction for who would win a match? I mean, just the fact that no matter what the match is, there are multiple people on the panel and no two people ever agree on what's going to happen just is ridiculous to me. It's like, I mean...
Now, hold on, Charles. Are you saying that Heath Slater was not a legitimate pick to win the Battle Royal?
Well, that's the exception, because I actually thought that was awesome and kind of the highlight of the pre-show, to be honest.
But, it was.
But, I mean, I'm sure that those people... I mean, Renee Young could probably easily lead, Alex Riley and Booker T and Christian... in selecting a pizza and picking the right toppings and everyone being happy, but they can't decide who's going to win a match. I mean, it's such a small thing, but it's just drives me crazy because it shines through that every single aspect of what we're seeing is so contrived and calculated, and it gets old.
So if we're playing Survivor, hold on, Dylan, if we're playing Survivor with the pre-show crew, who are you throwing off the island first?
Who am I throwing off first? That's tough. Probably Booker T. And it's not even that he's that terrible in the sense that he's really charismatic and he's energetic and, you know, he has a role there. But he's also the one that I think is the most transparently phony of the group that they, you know, regularly have out there. So I think Booker T gets the axe first if I'm picking, if I had to cut one of those guys.
He also has the exact same hairstyle as the lady who taught my Sunday school class in fourth grade.
What the fuck?
And I notice that every time I see him lately, he's got that huge freaking bun on his head. I kind of want them to go back into their pay-per-view archives and superimpose it on Booker T's head in every match he's in.
Holy shit.
That would be badass.
Well, the one thing about Booker T on that show is he always picks Randy Orton. That's like the running thing. And every match Randy Orton is in, he always picks Randy Orton. It's like back in the day, I don't know if people remember NFL Today when Jimmy the Greek Snyder was on there. Jimmy the Greek would always pick Dallas. And no matter who they played against, he always picked Dallas Cowboys, no matter what. And Orton is like Booker's Dallas Cowboys. And speaking of Booker, he's going to be on a Lucha-type show coming up next week in Texas. And he's being billed as Mr. Booker T.
Nice.
And the picture
of him, where in Texas, Chris?
I can't remember the exact city right now. The picture they got of him is the picture of him with that hairdo.
Oh, man. What if he loses a hair versus hair match?
Not even the hair. All of the hair. Just the hairstyle.
Just the bun.
Just the bun. The bun has to come out.
Anyway. Okay, so the second pre-show match, guys, was Cameron versus Naomi, the Battle of the Funkadactyls, and I didn't see this one either. So, you know, Dylan, what happened?
I mean, you know, the thing about this match was, well, here's what I will say for this. This was probably, while it was definitely not good, it was probably not as bad as you would think, or maybe you would fear. Naomi's a pretty good athlete, and they really didn't give her an opportunity to do any meaningful athletic spots, which I thought was kind of odd. The match was sort of built around, like, Cameron doing, you know, sort of, actually pretty smart cheating tactics. Like, every time she would get in, caught up in the rope, she would throw a cheap shot of some sort, which I thought was kind of smart. But she's so unnatural in everything that she does that even though she's doing things that are smart, it still doesn't look good. So, you know, it was okay for what it was. I mean, I would call it, you know, not good, but it wasn't as nightmarish as you would suspect it could be. I actually thought it was better than the other woman's match on the card, which we'll get to later. But
save that for later.
It was okay. It was certainly nothing that you would want to ever watch once, let alone twice.
Charles?
Yeah, I mean, the match wasn't really horrible, like Dylan said. I mean, it wasn't good at all, but, I mean, I was kind of distracted the whole time because they both have new outfits, and neither one of them, I think, really made any sense. Like, I get that WWE or wrestling is not really presented as a fake sport anymore, and I understand that. But the idea of Cameron having an outfit that has a built-in tie and a schoolgirl uniform to it, like, it doesn't add up to me at all. I don't understand what she's going for, what that look is. Because she was kind of dressed like Britney Spears in the Baby One More Time video.
Oh, wow.
So it was like she was attending, like, Eastland on Facts of Life, but that they kicked her out because... I don't understand. Like, I mean, we'll see what her new gimmick is, and maybe that will play into the outfit. But, yeah, I don't get the whole naughty schoolgirl, like, you know, funk enthusiast turned naughty schoolgirl thing at all.
Okay, so for now on, whenever you come on these shows with us, Charles, you are the fashion consultant. Okay.
Now Naomi. Okay, if we're going to talk about fashion, Naomi. She at least was wearing something. I mean, it was pretty tacky because it was like entirely checkerboard, but at least it looked like a wrestling outfit. So, like, she looked like she came to wrestle. Whereas I think Cameron, I don't know what she was there for. It just, like I said, it just made no sense.
Let's all be honest here. That attire was nothing but fetish. That was a fetish attire from whoever the writers or whoever. That's all that was. That's all I thought about. It's like this was like some type of hentai type thing going on here the way they were dressed. You know, I thought there'd be tentacles coming out soon.
That is awesome.
You know? But
yeah, somebody had a childhood crush on Tootie Ramsey.
Yeah. Dude, you remember Tootie's last name? Holy shit.
Dylan, I hate to steal Wayfarer's thunder, but I'm afraid I got some bad news for you. That you'll be seeing that match again. Probably four or five more times.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be another theme for this, is how many of these wonderful matches we're going to get rematches. I thank the Lord for that.
Yeah. So, well, let's start off the show proper then. It's the same match we had last month when we had the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Right, we're in a different month. Oh, wait, are we in the same month? I don't know. Anyway, 3 weeks.
Who the hell cares?
Yeah.
We're in a new month.
Okay, cool. It was 3 weeks ago. But it's Harper and Rowan versus the Usos, except this time in a 2 out of 3 falls match. I really enjoyed this match. The two quick falls in the first two falls did not bother me. I know they bothered Dylan, so I'm going to give Dylan a chance to get that off his chest.
I will say this was easily the best match on the show. I mean, not even close. There was nothing else that was even half as good as this, to be honest.
Not even.
So I mean, regardless of any criticism I have of this match, at the time there were things that annoyed me about the match, but in hindsight, as the show developed. You know, I wish every match on the show was even, you know, close to as good as this, or even a couple matches were close to as good as this. So I should preface my comments with that. Here's the problem I have with the 2 out of 3 falls format in this instance. It felt like this is how it came across to me. It felt like they knew they had to do something to escalate the feud because the feud's been going on for a while. And they wanted to do something that was maybe slightly different, and they do all these theme pay-per-views now where you got Hell in the Cell and you know, the ladder match pay-per-views, which there feels like there's like 4 of them, you know. So you got all this shit. To me, the logical thing to do would have been put these guys in a cage or in a street fight, because they're guys who they work really stiff. They all of them have really big spots that would really stand out, and they could really enhance in that sort of environment. But no, they give them a 2 out of 3 falls match, which in principle is okay. I mean, WWE did a great 2 out of 3 falls match a couple of years ago with Bryan and Sheamus. The problem was, as I was watching this, it was like there was no need for it. It was completely needless as a stip. There was absolutely no aspect of the psychology of this match that was built or enhanced by it being 2 out of 3 falls. Both of the finishes in the first 2 falls were pretty flat, and I thought uninteresting. I would have been okay with the big boot finish if we haven't seen Jimmy and Jay kick out of that exact same spot dozens of times already in this feud. As it was, it just felt ridiculous that he couldn't get up from it here. It was pointless. It was completely pointless. They felt like they needed to add a stip. They didn't, for whatever reason, decided not to do a stip that would be more violent and sort of, I think, cater to these guys' skills better. And instead they went with a different stipulation that they don't use very often. And it would have been fine if they had used, because the match went like, I don't know, what, 20, 25 minutes? It would have been fine if they had spaced things out better. But they didn't space things out very well. I didn't think it was well put together from that perspective. The third fall was really awesome as your sort of, you know, 4 guys who just beat the hell out of each other, car crash-ish sprint, where, you know, guys are just decking each other, hitting big moves left and right, lots of good near falls, lots of good teases. And I would have been fine if the match had just been that. I would have been fine if the match had been 10 minutes and it was that. I would have been fine if the match had been 25 minutes and it was better built. I would have been, it just felt like it felt like it was obvious to me that the stipulation was just thrown together with no thought at all about what they were going to do with it whatsoever. So, we need a stip, so we'll use this one because it's different and fuck it and whatever we get, we get.
Okay.
Still a good match, maybe even a very good match, but I like last pay-per-view's match better.
I'm going to disagree. I thought that, like I said, it didn't affect me at all, the stipulation itself. I thought that the first 2 falls, if nothing else, were logical the way they ended up. You know, and I thought JBL actually did a pretty good job of saying that. Having said that, you know, I agree with you. By far and away, the match of the night. Chris, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, Dylan, you've watched a lot of Lucha lately. This is textbook, you know, EMLL, Arena Mexico, Trios match philosophy there. You know, the first two falls have been really quick, and then you built that long third fall. And this is, you know, what we've been seeing. And, yeah, I mean, some of the second fall finish was kind of shaky. That little schoolboy deal. But that third fall kicked a lot of ass. You know, the one thing, and another thing that was reminiscent of current Lucha, all the super kicks that was being thrown. I thought Oliver Jr. and La Sombra were going to start running out next and start throwing the super kicking people left and right. But, yeah, I mean, the near falls were done real well. I thought the selling of that was nice. Roman actually coming off the top rope, you know, was fun. The double superplex was fun. Harper's lariat was sick. Yeah, the Usos, and I love the Usos selling the frustration of not being able to finish them off with that the body press off the top rope. I love that. I love this guy is just, he just doesn't know what to do. So now we got to go get both of us to do it, hit him at the same time. Although one of them almost broke his neck, if you notice when he came down. I mean, he hit head first in the mat. But, yeah, that was a hell of a damn match. And I wonder if they're going to do another gimmick match like Dylan proposed maybe to finish this off at SummerSlam. Well, I want to see him go at it. Hell.
Yeah, I don't want it to get, like, to the point where you just resent the match taking up space on a card, kind of like Randy Orton versus Christian a few years ago, where the first 15 times it was like, okay, cool, and then the last 15 or 20 times is like, man, would these guys get off my fucking screen, you know? So,
well, they can't do it on TV every week. That's the problem. They gotta, you know, space it out, you know, make it special for the paper.
Yeah. Charles, what'd you think of this attack?
I think Dylan pretty much said the majority of what I would say about this match. There were just, the only things I would add is that superplex spot, I thought that were, for anyone who didn't see it, Eric Rowan had both Usos on the top rope and then superplex both of them to the mat. I don't know. I mean, matches like that spots like that, I should say, get a big pop, but I don't know how much I personally like them, just because I think it like requires so much from the person who's taking the move, and it's so obvious that there's all that setup time where they're just getting in perfect position, and it's really distracting to me, like, just because there's no way to possibly pull off a move like that without getting help from your opponents, and so I have a problem with that spot.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, except if it was Cesaro who was doing it, because I believe that guy could lift heaven and earth, man. You know, Cesaro.
Well, we got it later on.
Yeah,
and the other thing that I was ready for a title change here.
And
we didn't get that, so I was a little disappointed by that. But also, the biggest thing that stuck with me was that it was just a total waste of the stipulation, like Dylan said. And yes, they did get a decent amount of time, and had it just been billed as like a regular one-fall match, and they got that much time, I think we would all be ecstatic. But when I hear 2 out of 3 falls, I'm expecting a half hour. And I thought it would have been really cool for an undercard match to get that much time on a show, just because that's not something that happens very often. I wasn't expecting that, but I was kind of hoping for it.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of time, but I see where you're coming from. But I don't know. I think we can talk about the end of this match and combine it, with the booking with the end of the Wyatt match and what that means for the Wyatts. But we'll talk about that in a little bit, but let's move on. So next, man, I was like, wow, they're going to put the two best matches on the show back to back. They're doing the Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose video package. Wow. I can't believe they're going that way. I guess that's going to, you know, set up Rollins later on in the night. Didn't happen that way. No Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose. God, I was pissed off. Chris, were you pissed off?
Yeah, I would have definitely loved to have seen that match, no doubt.
No, were you pissed, Chris? Were you pissed?
Was I pissed? Yeah, I was pissed. Yeah, I wanted to see it. But I see what they where they were going. And yes, it's bait and switch, and it's not good business, totally. But what they did do worked in the end to get where they wanted to go, I think, with this angle. And, they're in a tough situation right now because who do you want to job? Do you want to job Rollins? Do you want to job Ambrose? Or do you want to do the shitty finish? You know, who knows what to do here. But I think what they did worked. And Ambrose's character is this out-of-control guy who just is doing anything he can to get a Seth Rollins was pumped up big time tonight. And I thought that the stuff they did with the agents was good because they don't hardly do that anymore like that. They used to do it all the time. Bald and Balder security out there was hilarious trying to help Seth Rollins. And then Triple H was. I thought Ambrose was going. The one thing that should have happened was Ambrose should have took a shot at Triple H. I thought that would have been awesome. But I guess maybe they're saving that for Roman Reigns. I don't know. But you definitely sitting there going to have that match at SummerSlam, and that's all they were doing. I guess just buying time. But yeah, the business wise, it wasn't smart.
Charles, what was your thoughts on this non-match?
I kept thinking about the people who did not watch this on the network, but ordered it on pay-per-view. And I realize that that's not a huge number, but I mean, they basically false advertised a match that they were capable of delivering. For some reason, I don't know what they were going for between that and last week's Raw with Seth Rollins' fake knee injury. I don't know. I really don't understand how that connected to what we saw tonight at all. But also if I'm watching and I ordered the pay-per-view and I'm getting chastised all night by Michael Cole because I haven't bought the network, and then there's a match that I actually paid to see that wasn't given to me for no good reason.
Or God forbid you signed up for the network, you know, for this match.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, either way, I know that I would be really turned off and I would kind of say, fuck this company and not want to give them any of my money. Like it would almost be enough to anger me to the point where I wouldn't want to subscribe to the network because they did a huge bait and switch. So, which is something that they haven't really done in a long time. And I realize, I think you can do stuff like that occasionally and it's not so bad. So it's not that WWE has a habit of doing that. So I don't want to criticize them too much for it. But right now they're struggling, and it just doesn't make sense to me that they would take a match that they've actually built up really well and that a lot of people were excited to see and then just not do it. I mean, if they weren't going to give the match tonight, I understand that. I can understand the logic in holding it off until SummerSlam, but why not just not schedule it for tonight?
Right.
And just put it on at SummerSlam.
Or cancel it in advance so people would know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay, Dylan, I know 3 weeks ago when we talked, you said you were really disappointed in the Rollins heel turn. Has anything changed in that time?
Oh, no. I don't think he's a good heel. I mean, tonight was like the worst case scenario for me when it comes to this because I do like Rollins as a worker, and I love Ambrose. So I didn't get the match that I wanted to see, but I did get another shitty Seth Rollins heel promo that sucks cock. You know, like, great, wonderful. Another fucking god-awful Seth Rollins promo. That's really what I want to see. This was fucking terrible. I thought it was an absolute fucking disgrace. To quote Mark Lawrence, it was the biggest abortion I've ever seen. For them to do this, days before, they are about to announce their numbers for the network. Just days before, they have to announce the numbers on August 1st.
Are they really? You
know? And yeah, they have to. They have no choice. It's a quarterly meeting. So they've got, awesome. And nobody knows if they're going to announce the number as of June 30th, which I think is what they can get away with doing because of when the quarter falls, or the number as of right, you know, now. But for them to do something like this, and with how desperate they come across plugging the network in the last few weeks, and with pay-per-view to have died as much as it has, you know, a monumental death, really, if you look at the most recent pay-per-view buy rate numbers in terms of who are actually purchasing these pay-per-views, for them to do something this bad and stupid, honestly, you know, it's amazing. I mean, like, I can't, in many ways, this was the sort of same old WWE show in a lot of ways, and we'll get to all the reasons why as we go through more of these matches. I understand Chris's point in the sense that they screwed up. There was no logical person to lose. I agree with that. Just like they screwed up with Ryback and CM Punk in the cage, and neither guy ever recovered, I might add, because the company are fucking idiots, and they hotshot this stuff because they're too fucking stupid to figure out how to wait to do something. They shoot this injury angle with Seth Rollins, which was an angle that had no purpose at all. They could have easily used that as an excuse to cancel this match, by the way, but they didn't. Instead, they shot that angle for no reason whatsoever, apparently, and still advertise this match, which doesn't happen. There was no sensible reason to do this the way they did this on this show. Coming from my personal perspective, as somebody who has a ton of problems streaming the network, which a lot of it has to do, I think, with the wireless connection in my house, but by the same token, I have no problem streaming Netflix, I have no problem streaming Hulu, I have no problem streaming Ustream. It's only the network I have these problems with. Yeah. And for this to be an issue, you know, and for them to do this on a pay-per-view this bad, see, that's the other kicker. There was nothing else to save the show. Even on paper, there was nothing else to save the show. And then it unfolded even worse than it looks on paper. So for them to do this on this show especially, that was so weak, to me, this just says to me, Dylan, it's time to start stealing these pay-per-views again. And I don't give a shit that I'm saying that in public. It says to me, Dylan,
Place to Be Nation would like to interrupt and say that we do not endorse piracy of WWE Network shows.
It says to me, do not give them any money ever again. It's like, and honestly, this is not a joke. I'm not one of these guys who's like, oh, fuck WWE, I'm never going to watch them again. I will watch them again. I watch them every week. I have for years. But in terms of, like, the idea that $9.99 or whatever the hell it is being auto-drafted from my bank account every month, and they can't even, and they do something this fucking stupid that serves no purpose on a show that was this bad otherwise, fuck them, man. Like, it's just awful. And I honestly don't think it helps Anderson Reigns in the long run. I don't think it really helps them.
Not at all.
Dylan,
go ahead, Charles.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you a question just to throw in. Does this at all, not just this feud, I mean, you could say this about the whole direction of the company, but especially this feud, it really feels like it's being booked completely on the fly with no direction at all. Like, I don't think they have any idea where it's going or when they want it to end.
Because they didn't expect Ambrose to get over this much.
Right.
I really believe that. I think they thought, well, we've got Seth Rollins, we'll make him a big heel. You know, because he was getting over as the guy who did the high spots in the Shield and kind of getting the big pops for his offense. So we'll turn Seth Rollins heel. He'll be a big guy. Reigns is going to be a big guy. And then Ambrose, he'll be okay. He'll survive. He'll do well. I don't think they had any thought that he was going to be, in many ways, the most over guy in the company. I don't think they had any thought of that at all. So now it's just like, well, shit, what do we do? And, you know, they don't respond well to the fans actually cheering for people. That's not something that the WWE does well with. They really don't know how to handle that, especially in recent years. I mean, they really struggle with the best way to capitalize on fans liking wrestlers. So
That is the most insane comment ever uttered that happens to be true.
Yes.
I mean, you're absolutely right. It's like, here's our vision. Here's our canvas we're going to paint on. And, oh, wait, you like that? Here, let me change that color. Let me change that scenery so you don't like it anymore. You know, you're absolutely right.
Look how long it took for them to get Austin right. Austin was it took him over a year to get him, I mean, straight. I mean, they couldn't handle that right to begin with. You know, they screwed him up to start off.
How did they screw him up? I'm going to disagree with you. I thought that was a pretty great slow build, man. That was, even though they didn't have to give him the belt, that was still the Steve Austin show, and he was the focal point, you know, of most shows.
It wasn't until the Stunner on McMahon, you know, is when they finally decided to go full bore with it. Although, you know, Austin had his injury. But still, to start off with, after the Brett stuff, it still, you know, it wasn't done the way it should have been done. And Dylan is completely right. They do not know how to handle anything organic. And then when they try to address it,
they just shove it down the throats, and it's not organic anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
yep, huge. And that's a great point.
That's
huge. I just thought this was, to me, this was absolutely nightmarish. And I'll give credit to Ambrose and Rollins because they did work hard in the actual brawl segment. I mean, they didn't phone it in. They you know, Ambrose was. I mean, it was done as well as it could be, but it doesn't help those guys because the people want to see the match. You know what I mean? That, like, those guys got over by having great wrestling matches. They didn't get over because people wanted to see Seth Rollins' heel promos. They didn't even get over because of Ambrose's promos, and I think Ambrose was a very good promo. They got over because of their matches. People want to see them wrestle. They don't want to see them, you know, it's fucking stupid. It's really dumb. I can't believe that they would do that, particularly now. Like, when they're going into the hard stuff or when they need people to resubscribe to the network, when pay-per-view providers are dropping them left and right and they're about to lose pay-per-view altogether. I mean, I understand the idea of doing something outside of the box on a pay-per-view, given that the pay-per-views are about to go away. But if you're going to do that, why not have, at the end of the night, Seth Rollins runs out to cash in, and then the pay-per-view feed dies, and you can only see what happened on the network. If you're gonna fuck with your pay-per-view audience, do something that makes the network must watch. Don't make the whole show feel like it's fucking a waste of time.
Will, are we going to talk about the outside portion of the Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose stuff later?
I wasn't planning on it, but if you'd like to, go ahead.
Okay. Lots of things bothered me about that. Lots of things. First of all, why was there a camera there that would just happen to be filming Seth Rollins walking around outside? I know that that's something that WWE doesn't pay attention to, but it's something that they should, because it's something that I think I don't know if people who started watching maybe in the last 10 years or 15 years even noticed stuff like that.
I don't think they do.
But for anyone who's been watching for any length of time, when you see a camera, there should always be an explanation for why the camera is there. And so that bothered me. But also the fact that Seth Rollins – what my immediate thought when I saw Seth Rollins driving off in the car was that no one in wrestling ever learns anything, because I had flashbacks to the end of 1999 when Vince Russo booked Bret Hart to drive away in a car running away from Goldberg and slid on the ice and almost died. I just think, you know, people in wrestling don't learn these lessons. To me, that is a clue right there that you should never do a live angle with a wrestler driving a car. And I mean, and then they did it. So that those two things were just, I mean, those are old gripes, but that really just stood out to me when I was watching it. I feel like there's so much about the presentation of WWE right now that just seems to be on autopilot. Like they're doing all these things just because that's the way they've done it for so long, but they're not really putting any thought into why they're doing these things. So it just seems really lazy and just, and that, so that was kind of my takeaway from that segment, because they even knew the right camera shot to get to ensure that we saw Dean Ambrose popping out of the trunk. Like, there's no logic to it. I thought that was pretty bad.
Kevin Dunn. This is all that Kevin Dunn BS is going on right now, man. It makes you wonder. And I talked to somebody in the business who told me that they honestly think that Kevin Dunn is really trying to sabotage Triple H, man. It's ridiculous right now.
I don't think that's a good example of Kevin Dunn sabotaging, but I do agree that they do not put enough care into things that, you know, what we would call logical steps, you know, or something.
I mean, how hard would it have been for Seth Rollins to say that he doesn't feel safe and to demand that there's a camera with him in case something happens and he has to take Dean Ambrose to court for attacking him? Like, they could.
That would have been perfect.
Would have been perfect.
But with the cameras, though, how long is it? I mean, that's been going on for years now, where the cameras are following guys outside the building and they get attacked, you know?
To be fair, Charles, the Ultimate Warrior documentary shows us once and for all that cameras apparently follow these guys everywhere all the time.
they're like TMZ.
Yeah.
That's the one thing we've learned.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Just that.
Anyone else have anything to say about this Rollins-Ambrose debacle?
Yeah, fuck it. I hate it.
All right. Well, let's move on to a feel-good moment of the night. AJ Lee versus Paige. know we were all like, this epic rematch. And Dylan, I'm going to start off with you here because I know right now there's a big issue of letting the girl slide on this sliding scale. I know you called me out on it last month when I enjoyed the Divas match, but if we're grading these girls on a good wrestler scale, I know you think that Paige is the absolute pit. So your overall impressions of AJ Lee versus Paige right now?
Well, I don't think Paige is a bad wrestler in the sense that she was very good in NXT. But I just don't look. She's not been good on the main roster. Period. I mean, like, there's no way to sugarcoat that. She's not even doing like
her
Masters.
Her or Emma, both of them looked horrible on the main roster and whatever.
I mean, she's not even doing the Chris Masters, Drew McIntyre sort of thing where maybe she's wrestling on the B shows and she's having fun 5 or 6 minute matches that nobody is paying attention to. She just isn't good, you know, and like, and you know, it makes you wonder, was she good in NXT because of the agents? Was she good in NXT because they've got a system in place that you know, allows these women to play, you know, play up their strengths rather than their weaknesses? Was it just luck? Is she just been unfortunate since she's come to the mail? I don't know the answer. What I do know is if we're going to do this thing where we talk about women in wrestling and we make a really big deal about sort of leveling the playing field and having the presentation of female wrestling be better than it is, which I actually agree with, really. But if you're going to come from that perspective, you have to actually come from that perspective. You can't constantly grade on a curve and say, well, you know, you can't out of one side of your mouth say, well, look at this Charlotte versus Natty match. It was so great because they actually gave these women time and they busted their ass and they had a good match. And now to the other side of your match say, well, you know, Divas matches aren't really designed to be any good. Fuck you. Pick a side. You know what I mean? Pick a fucking side. Either say that the rules apply to everybody because that's the way it goes, or be open and admit that you're grading on the curve and the rules don't apply to everybody and we should have a lower standard steep for the Divas because of the way they're being presented or whatever. I'm fine with either perspective, by the way. But you have to pick a perspective. You can't just go back and forth based on whatever you feel like because you're trying to get yourself over as you know, the most politically correct guy in wrestling commentary. I mean, that's fucking ridiculous. You know, like, and I'm speaking as somebody who's about as socially liberal as it gets. Like, this has nothing to do with my personal politics. It's just absurd. This match was not good. Okay, the match sucked. They blew a bunch of stuff, and I don't even care whether you want to blame Paige or AJ. To me, that's almost incidental. Although I thought AJ's bumping was the only thing in the match that was noticeably decent. The point is, the match was really bad. And, you know, I was on record on the last show as saying I wanted to see these women get some time on a pay-per-view in a slot that wasn't the death slot and see what could happen. And they didn't deliver this time. And we need to be honest about that. That's all I'm saying.
Honesty, the best policy. Charles, what do you think?
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I was going to say about this match.
Y'all share like the same brain, man. That's scary.
Yeah, tonight, and it's probably the most that I've ever talked about women and curves, but but at the same time, there were a couple of things. I do feel like, in a way, I mean, because I agree with you that she's way overrated, and I don't think she's very good. But I also think that Paige is being deliberately sabotaged, even though she's not very good. She was put in a position to, when she's a horrible talker and she froze a few weeks ago on Raw, and then she was put in the position to do color commentary the next week, which is notably like the one thing in WWE that doesn't get scripted to the letter. And then knowing that like that's kind of a weak area for her, they had her do all this emoting and character work in this match. And I couldn't figure out exactly what it was she was trying to convey. I still don't know. But she kept getting these weird looks on her faces like she was trying to decide what to order from a menu.
Oh, man.
And really, that's the only thing I can equate it to. It's like when you see people who, which, side tangent, people who go to McDonald's and look at the menu crack me up because
Hello, I've never been to McDonald's. But anyway, but that's kind of what
it is. Hold on. Sometimes you're just looking for that clue on which one you're going to select.
Yeah.
Because I've been guilty of that, where I like tilt my head a little bit, like, that Big Mac looks pretty good today. But that quarter pounder, and I'll tilt my head the other way, that quarter pounder looks even better. You know, I don't know, man. I'm going to defend the people order in the drive to McDonald's, man. That's fucked
up. Like, forever to look at the freaking menu. Anyway, if the goal was to capture capture their emotion, then Paige did that really, really well.
Yeah, Chris, what was Paige trying to emote in this match, man? Help us out.
It looked like junior high school drama class, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, the sabotage is there completely on her.
So you believe that's another one of those done things, huh?
Yes, NXT. The NXT folk, you know, let's screw them when we can. But anyway, the deal with Paige, you know, that's not her gimmick. What she's got right now is totally the opposite of what she was in NXT. Yeah, and as far as her as a worker, yeah, she is not ready right now, I don't think, for what where she's at. I think she needed more seasoning. She's only 21. I mean, she needed more seasoning in NXT. And whoever lays the matches out in NXT, especially the Divas matches, I mean, God, why can't they bring them into the main shows? I mean, they're so worlds apart, the layout. You know, the work is one thing, but the layout is so different. You know, it's night and day. But the botches were, yeah, I mean, that's not layout regard botches. And there was a lot of this match. I mean, Jesus Christ.
I've seen questionable layout at NXT as well. You know, I'm not going to say that NXT is perfect because, man, I've tried watching TV on a weekly basis, and sometimes that's just as rough, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not, but it's better than what they've done on the main shows lately, for sure.
But the gimmick here,
this whole frenemies deal, and you know, it's AJ's miscast in this role, Paige's miscast in her role. It just does not work.
Yeah. Well, and
how long until the term "shining wizard" is banned?
I
know, it's amazing.
I was happy that they had put a moratorium on that move for a while, because I was so tired of it, man. In the last 10 years, you know, probably for the last 3 years, you didn't see the Shining Wizard very often, but man, for like the 10 years before that, holy shit!
Now, can't you just picture like Kenta watching that match and thinking, "Fuck, they're taking everything. I've got no finish. What
poor
the fuck
Kenta.
Is gonna be my finish?"
Poor Kenta, man. Anyway. All right, guys, let's take a quick break here, to get that place to be recognition going on. When we come back, we'll talk about the last few matches on the show, and we'll see if the show can be saved by the savior, Chris Jericho. Probably not, but we anyway. Yeah. All right, guys, we'll be right back.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation. Okay, welcome back to the Place to Be Nation reaction show for Battleground, or as I call it, Bad Booking Day. It really is, right? Wasn't this the horrible pay-per-view last year that won like worst pay-per-view or worst show of the year?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Mainly due to bad booking. Well, anyway, let's talk about some booking here. And to me, I thought it was Kill Charlotte Day, because it seemed to me, you know, as we're going to see coming up, that this was an attempt to kill Charlotte as a town that will draw wrestling fans once and for all.
I thought the show was in Tampa.
I thought it was Charlotte. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's in Tampa.
Fuck. Oh, you know
that's great.
Charlotte? Last night I was watching Live Nation, and there was a Kiss concert on Yahoo, and it was in Charlotte. And Paul Stanley must have said Charlotte about 30,000 times. And so, I went through this whole thing thinking Charlotte. So seriously, I actually thought, I was like, man, they're in Charlotte and they're not bringing Ric Flair out. I'm shocked, you know. Okay, so it was they did say it was Tampa when Sandow came out in his outfit tonight. That's right. Okay, no, seriously, Paul Stanley said Charlotte. Maybe if you get an over under to bet in Vegas, I'm going to say at least 200 times in a 2.5 hour show.
He understands the cheap pop.
He does, man. I mean, fire flying out across the audience, yelling to the hometown crowd 200 times. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So our next match, speaking of cheap pops and cheap heat, Jack Swagger versus Rusev. Now, I know we've talked about these, you know, patriotic, jingoistic, xenophobic angles before, and I know that they've built Rusev up, But what do you think about how they responded tonight, Charles, so soon after that tragic plane tragedy this past week?
They didn't really do anything that offended me. I mean, they really just stayed the course, which may have been a worse decision. I don't know. But, I mean, they were doing all the same things that they've been doing for weeks now. And so, but it did kill the crowd. This match was one that I expected to be one of the hottest matches of the night, and the crowd was pretty dead for it, which surprised me. I do think that Rusev, I mean, they've done a great job developing Rusev as an act. And I think, you know, when someone finally beats him, it will be a big deal. So, but I don't understand why they bothered to do a countout finish in this match. You know, Swagger's not going to be hurt by taking a pinfall. So I'm not sure why they didn't do something more decisive, unless they're setting up a rematch. I could see them potentially doing a flag match at SummerSlam or something like that.
Even then, though, don't you think that even then, unless Swagger wins, then what's the fucking point, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. So, I mean, the match was okay. I actually think, I mean, Rusev has improved a ton in a short period of time. So I was really impressed with him in this match. And I think he outworked Swagger, who, you know, since it's my job to report these things, Jack Swagger has great hair until he starts wrestling, and then he looks like a hot mess who just got electrocuted. I just had to throw that in. But,
Christ. Oh, God.
But, yeah, I mean, there's not much else I would say about this segment.
Dylan, I know you loved Lana spitting truth, man. What'd you think about the match and the pre-match segment as a whole?
I love Lana's promos, and I like this promo, and I don't care if it offends people. So that's my thought on that. You know, as a side rant that's related, you know, if we had known what Dick Murdoch's actual politics were in 1985, I think we've all, like, you know, if social media existed, and not that that's exactly the same thing, but the culture has changed so much now that, you know, we criticize wrestling when they don't deal with current events, and when they don't sort of feel modern, and when they don't feel relevant, and when it doesn't feel relevant to the times. But then, if it does, we criticize it for being relevant and potentially offending people. You know, when Jay Briscoe says a really bigoted, awful thing on Twitter that I thought was horrific, you know, we rightfully criticize and we rightfully, you know, go after him. But also, that becomes a reason why he can never work for a major promotion again for the rest of his life. But regardless of how his response, what his response is, when meanwhile we sort of like, oh, Dick Murdoch was great, Terry Gordy was wonderful. Like, it's so easy to look back that way, and it's so easy to look back at like the old jingoistic angles and go, this was awesome, and then pretend to be appalled by today's standard. I just think it's really dishonest. To me, the angle itself, I continue to like. The delivery of Lana's stuff, I continue to like. I do agree with Charles that I don't know where you go, though, because the culture has changed so much that this could become a really, really tricky issue for them going forward. And on top of it, as far as the match itself goes, I actually disagree with Charles a little bit. I didn't think Swagger was outstanding or anything, but I think this is the second time I've seen Rusev in recent weeks where I think it sort of exposed the fact that he doesn't know how to work a... And here comes Charles' favorite term, a control segment. He doesn't have offense when he's working on top that keeps the crowd invested in the babyface. You know, we saw it against Reigns on SmackDown, and I think you saw it again here. And the match I thought was not bad. I thought it was okay. Good enough to be one of the better matches on a really bad show, but not good enough to be a good match. The finish I thought was really odd because I don't know why they would protect Swagger there's just no logical reason, even if they're doing a payoff. Like, all of these young guys tonight, the new talent, the guys that are supposed to be filling in those slots as top guys, none of them came out looking better tonight. Rusev didn't look better. Bray Wyatt didn't look better. The Wyatts didn't look better. Ambrose and Rollins didn't look better. Every fucking one of them looked worse. Paige looked worse.
Cesaro did not look good.
Cesaro looked worse. I mean, to me, this was like a a cornucopia of fuck yous to the new talent. Just really shoddy across the board.
Conspiracy.
So, Chris, what do you think's going on here?
I like the match. I thought it could have been better, but I'm with Charles here. I thought the Rusev was overall better in the match, and we talked before the show about Swagger. I just don't know. I don't think he can work as a babyface. He's too much of a natural heel as far as in the ring as a worker that it just doesn't work in the ring. He does fine in promos, you know, in the background doing stuff with Zeb, but I just don't know about him as a babyface worker. Finish was weird. I totally thought we would get something of a clean finish because, yeah, it is Jack Swagger. But, yeah, and they beat him down at the end and all that shit, you know.
Yeah.
They probably going to a flag match, you know.
They were in Charlotte, of all places, you know.
I know. They go to a flag match, and that's a match that Swagger can win without Rusev even losing. He would have to get pinned. So Swagger can just grab the flag, you know, wave the flag, USA, then have a third match where Rusev, you know, takes care of him and moves on. So that may be what they do in the long run. But Rusev is improving, and I agree with Dylan in the fact that he hasn't grasped yet the control segments, which I know Charles is cringing. He hasn't done that yet, but he's getting there. He's growing. He's getting better every time I see him on the pay-per-view shows. You know, television, he works, you know, short matches. But it also goes to show how really good Big E is as a worker, because the Big E matches were way better than this.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I think the Big E matches were head and shoulders better above this. And, you know, more vicious, more violent. And, you know, like you said, I thought there'd be a lot more intensity with these guys coming out. And, you know, maybe that was the crowd, you know, having to endure this pay-per-view up to this point. I don't know. But it just didn't feel like a special moment. Like watching these two on Raw, it felt like a special moment. This did not feel special.
Well, they didn't give Zeb. Zeb should have cut an impassioned promo. Where was that?
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, that was sorely needed for this match to get them riled.
I agree with that.
They started chanting weird people, and they were getting into it. But Jesus Christ! I mean, you got Zeb Coulter, Dutch Mantel there, who is amazing on these type of promos, and you don't let him talk.
And also, I kept thinking this. During this match was that my dream angle, which I don't ever expect to happen, but which I would love, is where on Raw, Swagger is laid out and Rusev has Zeb cornered and he's about to get his hands on him when surprisingly out of nowhere, Cesaro makes the save, reuniting the Real Americans and forgetting that the last 6 months ever happened. And then they can go on. The Real Americans can then go on to feud with Orton and Kane, which would give us Zeb versus Stephanie. that's kind of what I would like to see happen that I don't think
I was. I was hoping you said Harper and Rowan so we could have some really great tag matches continuing, you know?
Yeah, but they could do that too. They could do that too. But that would fix Cesaro and that would get us some Stephanie versus Zeb stuff, which I think has potential too.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's move on. Charles, I know historically you're a big Chris Jericho fan, and no, I'm serious. I'm serious. And so,
it was like 10 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's history.
I said historically. I didn't say recently. I didn't say, you know. But that's why I'm going to start with you, Chris Jericho versus Bray Wyatt. Man, what did you think?
I think that Jericho's entire value at this point is in the return, and then there's none after that. It's in that one segment where he returns and gets the big return pop because this match had no crowd interest. Jericho, I mean, and that's the thing. Like I would expect at this point, I mean, Jericho's older. The fact that they didn't have a good match, I mean, you obviously would prefer that they did, but I think what bugged me more than anything is that they also worked a match that was so tone deaf, not just bad, but tone deaf. In the sense that they didn't even try to get people involved in it at all. They were just out there just doing a bunch of stuff. And
right. So they already had in their mind what they were going to do regardless of how the crowd reacted. Right.
Right. And theoretically the value of Jericho is that, you're going to get a hot match. You may not get a good one every time, but you're at least going to get one that people are excited about. And that didn't even happen here. We can talk about the match result. I kind of commented on this earlier today at Pro Wrestling Only, but I do feel like that finish was a response to the criticism that Jericho always gets about just coming back and doing a bunch of jobs and leaving. It was a way to swerve people, and that's all it was, which is kind of like masturbatory on its own. But
yeah,
I was not a fan of this at all. It was weird, and I don't know if you guys will know what I mean by this, but it feels like a match that was worked where they thought that there were going to be commercial breaks because they kept doing things like they kept doing transitions. Like,
I did not even think of that.
Jericho would go to the outside and stay there for a long time. He would get thrown to the outside, and that's always for a TV match, like a cue that, okay, they're going to commercial. Or like Bray or the Wyatts were sent back to the dressing room, and you would have thought that, you know, and that's something else that would normally cue a commercial. So it felt like the way the match was laid out was more like a TV match than a pay-per-view match. But also sure it wasn't very good, but more than that, it just wasn't very interesting.
Right. You know? Well, and I think this speaks to the booking. This is what I was getting at earlier. The Wyatts 6 months ago, when they were feuding with the Shield, they felt like major players. You know, Wyatt felt like he was on the ascension. Okay, don't even bring up that fucking tag team, Chris. All right. But he really did. It really felt like they were bringing these guys up along with Brian, along with Cesaro, you know, all the people that Dylan listed that he's pissed off about. And now it just feels like Wyatt's another guy. I think that Cena feud killed any interest the crowd had in Wyatt and his gimmick. I thought they got really too cutesy with the sing-along crowds, you know, while trying to keep this guy heel. And I think that, you know, it isn't just Jericho, and whatever you think about Jericho, I don't think it's just his return. But I think that the way that they've kind of killed Wyatt over the last 6 months has really hurt, too, when you put a guy whose only value is in the big pop, like Charles said, and combine him with a guy who has been made to look like a second, you know, in that second tier of wrestlers, you know, your Kofi's, Del Rio's, and that's what Wyatt feels like to me. He does not feel like a special new guy anymore. What do you think, Dylan?
I thought this match, first of all, I expected it to suck, so I didn't think it was going to be good. But here's the thing. I think the WWE really thought, oh, man, you know, Chris Jericho is a good worker, and he's a star, and we'll put him in there with Bray, and yeah, we might fuck these people over on this Rollins-Ambrose thing, but it's not going to matter because this match is going to save the show. I really think they thought that. I think their mentality, I think they're so clueless and so fucking stupid when it comes to stuff like this that they thought, man, you know, Bray has been this guy that's been over for us for the most part, although in the last, I think, month especially, that's dwindled considerably. And Jericho's coming back, and he's this guy that's a big star. People really love him. And this is going to completely save the show. We can get away with this Rollins Ambrose thing, which I think tells you all you need to know about how fucking stupid the bookers are for this company. Because anybody who's followed Jericho's most recent comebacks, and anybody who's followed Bray, who's a guy who I think wrestles to the level of his opponent, to be honest, knew that this match was potentially had disaster written all over. I mean, there was coming in, people should have known this had potential to be really bad. So I don't think that people should be surprised that this wasn't very good. I don't think that should really be surprising. And I actually agree with Charles's point in the sense that ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't think we should be that surprised that Jericho won clean. Because of, you know, Jericho is sensitive to those criticisms of him as a guy who just comes back to get over the likes of Fandango. You know, like, so I get it. The problem is, this is yet another guy who's had his nuts completely cut off. I mean, Bray Wyatt, and look, I've been pretty critical of Bray. I don't really like his promos. I think they're ridiculously over the top and hammy, and it's not really for me. But he's a guy that was really over. Whatever I think of him, he was super over with these crowds.
And I think the Cena feud not only hurt Bray, I think it hurt Cena too. I don't think Cena's been the same since then. I think that was a disastrous feud that hurt both guys. I think the use of Bray now is just dreadful. The fact that we're going to be subjected to another match that will be equally bad, possibly worse, between these two at SummerSlam, I mean, it's really, it's just, oh, God. I don't want to think about it.
I don't know if it hurt Cena. Hold on, because as much, because to me, I look at Cena like he's Teflon, man. You know, the crowd, like, you can see it in the main event tonight, man. The crowd was excited. They were hyped up for him, whether they're cheering for him or Reigns. It doesn't matter.
They were, but they booked him. See, Cena's very fortunate, and we'll get to this then, but they booked Cena against guys he's always going to get cheered against. I mean, you know, I cheer for Joe Solomon against Randy Orton and Kane.
It's a lot different when they're actually cheering for him versus the response he was getting, like with Daniel Bryan, where they're like, same old shit, this match sucks.
But that's kind of my point. They've put him in a position against guys who he's always going to get cheered against because those guys are people that are uniformly loathed. Nobody wants to see Randy Orton again. Right? So, you know, like, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. To me, the point with this match is nobody should be surprised it wasn't very good. I really ultimately don't think people should be surprised that Bray lost. But I think the fact that Bray lost, they fucked up Bray. You know when they fucked up Bray Wyatt? Whenever Bray Wyatt lost to John Cena at WrestleMania. That was a huge mistake. I said so at the time, and it looks even worse in the rearview mirror than it did at the time. It looks really bad. And that single act, by the way, was what resulted indirectly in us getting the Kane and Daniel Bryan feud. Because if Bray Wyatt beats Cena, it's going to be Bray versus Daniel Bryan at that first feud. It's not going to be fucking Kane. So much of what's gone wrong this year, which there's been a ton of from a booking perspective, can be traced to that real, real stupid moment where they put Cena over Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Chris, clean it up, bud.
Dylan's preaching, buddy, and he's telling the truth. You know, looking back in retrospect, that was the beginning of the downfall of the Bray Wyatt character. It led to Daniel Bryan getting fucked up. You know, it's led to this, you know, past few months where everything's been shaky. Regarding the match,
Evan Dunn.
Chris Jericho, my God. I mean, he's out of shape. He was botching stuff left and right. It was just terrible.
How is he out of shape?
These two, look at his midsection. I mean, he's not in ring condition.
I wish I looked like that at 45 or whatever he is.
you know what I mean as far as in ring condition. He's not there yet. You know, he's been out for a while.
I would like to say that we at Place to Be Nation do not encourage performance enhancing drugs of any kind. So,
well, neither am I. I'm just saying he could at least get some cardio or something going on.
He's on TV yoga, motherfucker. But, he's stretching.
But anyway, you know, he's not there yet. And Wyatt, they had a better match when he was Husky Harris in the old NXT show years ago. They had a way better match than this one tonight. These two have worked before. And I don't know. And Bray Wyatt is a character. You know, yeah, it was sure the Cena thing has killed him. But once they went overboard with the entrance, pushing the entrance and all that stuff, he's still over with the entrance. I mean, look at the crowd. They got their phones up and, you know, lighting up around and all that shit. But once the match starts, it's totally different. And if you notice on Raw Monday night, they were boring chants for his promo. So, I mean, it's getting to a point now where they're in a situation with him where they got to decide, you know, we got to do something to save this character. Because it could go downhill fast.
You are so wrong about being in shape. I'm just saying. I'm looking at the WWE Network right now, and this guy is in shape. He still has a six-pack going on. It's there. He's good.
Yes, a six-pack of natural
Chris
body.
Jericho's... he's hanging out with Buff Bagwell at the Miss Teen South Carolina. Did I ever tell you guys that story? Fuck it, I'll tell it on air. It's better than this pay-per-view.
I want to hear
this. See, I was at it... I was at an indie show in Charleston years ago, actually in Somerville, which is about 25 miles from here. Several years back, and like the he's like one of those shows, like nostalgia shows, the Rock and Roll Express were there. Dusty was signed an autograph. Nikita Koloff was signed an autograph. And Buff Bagwell is there. And this is at a high school gym. And on one side of the building, they're doing the Miss Teen South Carolina pageant. And on the other side, in the gym, they're doing the this wrestling show. So the promoter, Ricky Nelson, who was a mid-Atlantic jobber and whatnot, I'm sure Chris and Charles probably know the name. You may too, Will. He gets up and cuts the shoot promo in the ring on the Miss Teen South Carolina pageant, bitching about the fact that they don't have the appropriate parking that they were promised. And I mean, it's like he's a scathing promo talking about the tramps that are on the other side of the building and all this. I mean, it was unbelievable. So he cuts this vicious, mind you, this was supposed to be a benefit for the high school. He cuts this vicious promo on them. And then he's like, he ends it by saying, because he's holding the title belt, he's like, but this belt makes me a lot of money, so I don't really give a damn. And then he raises the belt above his head, and he's holding it up like he's toasting the wrestlers or at the autograph tables. And I look over, and there's Buff Bagwell with like four cases of beer in this fucking high school gym.
Nice.
Double fisting and toasting back the ring.
That's so badass, man. Only in wrestling.
Ricky Nelson and Ricky Nelson's name is RIKKI. So that's how he's doing a Poison tribute, with Ricky Ratchet.
It's funny that
you're awesome.
Ricky Rocket.
Ricky Ratchet.
There's your segue that was more entertaining than anything that was on this paper. We can get back to the show now.
That's an awesome story, man. Well, why couldn't have Buff Bagwell been on this show, man? It would have just made it complete, right? Like, it would have felt like a complete show.
The Buff Bagwell and Greg Valentine doing their stuff with their wrestling for the devil, beating up Sting so Shawn Michaels can make the save would have probably been the best thing for the show.
Dude, you could have thrown all those guys into our next match, the Intercontinental title Battle Royal. and it really has, man. I mean, with the Daniel Bryan injury, the Wade Barrett injury, the way that they've just completely run away as fast as they can from any new talent getting over. I know, Charles, you and I were talking about this before, about their mentality of only pushing one guy at a time, and how asinine that is. And Chris, you and I just had that conversation the other day as well, right?
Yeah.
And to me, it boggles the mind. But the Intercontinental title used to be kind of that stepping stone title. Now it feels like the kiss of death. So I'm almost happy that Miz won, so it can't stain any other wrestler. You just keep it on the Miz forever.
That's what I said on Twitter. I said the exact same thing. If a chopper belt, who better to have it than you?
Than the Miz. So, Chris, your thoughts on the Intercontinental title Battle Royal?
It was a battle royal, but they had fun spots. The highlight was easily Kofi and Cesaro. Kofi Kingston, his true calling in life is working battle royals. I mean, I don't know of anybody that has done more in battle royals than this guy, who's done less anything else in any of the matches than him. The spot tonight where Cesaro knocked him off onto Big E's shoulders, who had just got eliminated, and Big E, carrying him back to the ring like it was a chicken fight, and then Cesaro grabbing Kofi and deadlifting him from Big E's shoulders back into the ring from the apron in a suplex was insane. I mean, that Cesaro is a fucking freak. The rest of the match was kind of ass. Sandow looked like a character from Benny Hill. Like one of them old guys that, because he had that little black strap on the socks. I mean, that was total, old dude, 1960s type shit going on there. He looked like a grandfather, and it was hilarious. He's Slater. He's fucking Slater throughout Cesaro. I guess that's his payback for, firing his two buddies. So good for him. Bo Dallas. The one spot he had was hilarious. Miz winning, he was doing the Jerry Lawler
Vince McMahon tied hot around, you know, deal.
How dare you compare Jerry Lawler to The Miz?
Well, you remember that role that Lawler did where he got, you know, he hit and he showed up and he got, but he got eliminated.
I have
Everybody
no idea what you're talking
about. Got eliminated. You know, that's one thing. Miz actually fucking won the match. But, yeah, Xavier Woods, I thought it was funny that Xavier Woods and Big E were, like, working together. You know, they're supposed to be doing this whole thing of, you know, this Black Alliance type deal on the down low on Twitter. But Titus O'Neil was breaking it up, which was, I thought was hilarious. Like, he's Uncle Tom and got there in the ring. That end stuff, there was some issues there. And you notice when Dolph got Sheamus out of the ring, the fans kind of popped, but they didn't because they knew what was about to happen. You know, if they hadn't have done so quick, if they had Dolph, you know, stand there and thinking he actually won it, then it would have been a better thing for the crowd. But they saw Miz immediately come in there, and it just killed it dead.
Charles, what do you think, buddy?
Yeah, Kofi Kingston was the highlight of this. I knew, obviously, he would be doing something unique and different, but when it was announced that he was part of this, Heath Slater, like at the point that Heath Slater eliminated Cesaro, I was ready for a Heath Slater win. I had told myself if Heath Slater wins, this is all worth it. He's my guy. And I really,
Alex Riley would have been happy.
I really think, I mean, we talk about the Intercontinental title, you know, being kind of a worthless belt. Knowing that, like, I would have loved to have seen someone like Heath Slater or Bo Dallas or someone like kind of a comedy wrestler or Sandow even take it and run with it instead of putting it on someone where it is the kiss of death. But again, you know, The Miz is a good choice for that role too. By Battle Royal standards, and I'm usually not a fan at all of Battle Royals, I thought there was some good stuff in this. The stuff with Cesaro and Kingston, though, kind of got a little bit over the top. I mean, that second set of stuff where he landed on Biggie's shoulders, like, that was really well done. But they were doing this other thing that I don't even know how to describe, like, a couple of minutes before that, where Kingston was trying to powerbomb Cesaro onto the floor from the apron, and Cesaro was just holding on, and that I thought was a little much. And, you know, I think a lot of people on Twitter thought, okay, there's your Kingston spot, but he still had, you know, something else to come. I think this is, we've had a lot of battle royals this year, and I think that's really strange. I think this is the third one that I can think of off the top of my head. The second one to actually declare a champion when the previous champion was forced to vacate. So it was interesting in that regard. It just kind of reflects the disarray that it seems like WWE has been in.
I think that's going to be their MO. Anytime a championship, the champion gets injured, they're going to do the battle royal. Cause I think they're too lazy or too impatient to see tournaments through, you know, didn't they do a tournament for this title as well? Is that how Barrett won it?
Well, they did.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They did a tournament for a number one contender, didn't they?
Yes, the number one contender tournament, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. But I don't feel like that they're a fan of tournaments, right? That's why they got rid of the King of the Ring, which everybody and their mother wants to bring back. You know, so there's...
Well, they never really booked it well. Anyway. I mean, they did the first year with Bret Hart, but after that, I don't think they ever really booked it well anyway.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Even the Steve Austin year... That was more of circumstance, right, than actual what they intended to do.
Yeah,
their intention was to give it to Triple H.
And by that point, they were also putting the first round matches on free TV before the show, when the whole appeal of the tournament is the one night factor. So, yeah, I think 93 is really the only one that I think just like that they got right. But yeah, after that, it's kind of a mess.
Dylan, thoughts on this?
I didn't like it. I liked it. You know, I didn't think it was very good. You know, I've actually seen even more battle royals than most people because I subject myself to watching TNA weekly and reviewing it. VoicesOfWrestling.com. There's my plug. But this battle royal fetishism is not for me. I don't like battle royals. I don't want to see them. I don't care about them. I think it's a huge waste of guys. I think it's lazy. It's uninteresting. It takes up a huge block of time that could be devoted to just about anything else, like, you know, actually having a Seth Rollins Dean Ambrose match, for example. The Kofi stuff, to me, that's just tired at this point. I understand why people are impressed by it, because visually it's really impressive. But I actually thought both of those sequences were really a little too far in the contrived area for me. Like, neither one of them, it was too far over on the end of, okay, these guys are heavily cooperating. I felt the same way about that Charles felt about the Eric Rowan suplexing Uso spot. I didn't hate it, but it didn't get a pop out of me either. My favorite moments in this were Titus O'Neil stiffing the Great Khali for no reason, which I thought was completely absurd, ridiculous. Titus actually looked pretty good in the match just in general, but he's looked good all year quietly. And the other thing I really did, even though Cesaro getting dumped out pissed me off because I love the guy, Slater, his jubilation of doing it was pretty funny, I thought. Other than that, you know, I thought this was pretty not very good, waste of time. I knew The Miz was going to win. I called it ahead of time. It didn't surprise me in the least. I think they're going to do a title versus title thing with him and Sheamus, so, yeah.
Yeah, go, Charles.
I wanted to add something. The way that everyone went after Khali right away, I think would have so much more impact if WWE traditionally booked at this point where the big guys were the ones that won battle royals. It seems like one of those spots that's left over from the 70s when guys like Andre could win battle royals and could actually make a name for themselves from doing it. And that was kind of his thing. But I know that Khali has won battle royals before. I think he won the title that way at one point, but it's not something that happens often enough that I understand the logic and everyone going after Khali. It's more like, well, this is how battle royals have always been worked, so this is what we're going to do. So
also, where the hell is Mark Henry?
Yeah.
Or Big Show. Is Big Show hurt?
Big Show was doing a movie, but I think he just came back from it. He was doing something like that. Like, Mark Henry was on the MSG show. He was on the MSG house show. And they're totally about to turn him heel again.
RVD was supposed to be in, but, you know, no big loss, but they announced he was injured, so he couldn't compete. So we were actually spared that. So we're missing a true highlight of this segment, though, was the return of Bad News Barrett, who came out and gave this great promo, and, you know, yes, was talking about how he was going to get, you know, he's going to get his belt back. And God, I miss him so much.
I do too. He was one of the best guys on the show, and he's, you know, he's one of these guys that he works so hard, and I just don't know if he's going to get another shot again. I know Vince and those guys are supposedly high on him, but you know how they get when these guys get injury prone. And it really sucks because he has gotten really good. But I was watching this, and I just kept thinking, where the hell's Mark Henry? Like, I know he was healthy. He did the MSG house show where supposedly, like, he turned heel on Cena or whatever. It would have been nice to have another big body, like another guy in there who could have been the emphasis of like some interesting spots and like brought a different dynamic to the match. I don't know. This was just and Sheamus and Dolph, who are usually guys who are really on point, especially Sheamus, who I feel like is in many ways the best wrestler in the company week to week. He did not look on point tonight. It was an oddly off night for him.
I thought
him and Dolph were doing Cage AJ Lee tribute spots.
No, but I thought that they were trying to do a thing where they were trying to emphasize that his leg was hurt.
Maybe I just didn't catch that.
Yeah, I thought that's what they were trying to do. It seemed like his leg kept giving out on him. Was the reason for like those?
Perhaps you're right. I didn't catch that. If that's the case, I'll retract what I just said.
Yeah, but
it didn't come across that way watching it live.
I don't know. I think that I'm not going to call you bitter, but when I watched it, man, I had fun watching this match. You know, I understand the spots that y'all are picking out and kind of ripping up. I understand it, but when I go into a match like this, I expect absolutely nothing. So when I'm entertained for 10, 15 minutes, you know, and I completely forgot about The Miz. I thought that, that he got thrown out at some point, you know, because Miz is just completely forgettable to me. Like, I don't even think he's an instant channel turner for me. You know, I don't watch his segments. I don't watch what he's doing. I don't care. I wish he'd go away. I wish he'd get future endeavored. You know, so I completely forgot about that. And I thought that, you know, okay, so I thought about, like, the previous matches on the card. And I thought, okay, they're going to give the crowd a feel-good moment with Ziggler, you know, being that he was the only guy that they were chanting for in the entire match. And nope, didn't happen. But you know, like I said, the title's the kiss of death now, anyway. So whatever.
I mean, the other thing that I would add is that they really presented the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal this year at WrestleMania as something that's going to happen every year.
Yeah.
And so, to me, your winner in that match, if they want that gimmick to have any value at all in future years, kind of needs to be protected in Battle Royals. So I mean, of course I like Cesaro, but I also don't think it makes sense that just random guy wins this battle royal, then random guy wins this battle royal. Like, there's no hierarchy where one guy is, like, the king of battle royals.
Right.
And if they're going to do that many, then they should have someone who's kind of at that level in these matches. Because next year, when they try to promote the second annual Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, if they do, then, I mean, it's not like you can look back at what Cesaro's done in 2014 and that's going to be this huge, like, selling point of how it, you know, changed his career.
I think that it will have value if Cesaro wins it for a second year in a row, you know, where he ups his game at WrestleMania or something. You know, I think that's the only way it will. But if he's, like, thrown in there again for a second.
Look, if he's in another Battle Royal at fucking WrestleMania, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's the point.
How bad are they going to take a shit on this guy?
Yeah. I mean, they've
already fucking ruined his career at this point. I mean, my God. You put him with Paul Heyman, you may as well. Paul Heyman has ruined everyone he's been with, for starters, let's just be honest. He's destroyed everybody's career. He's a career destroyer, whether it be ECW or now, or, you know, it doesn't matter. The guy's a kiss of death. You talk about a kiss of death.
He drove Tommy Rich to drugs.
Man, would you leave Tommy Rich out of this?
He took Tommy Rich into the arms of Big Donnie.
God damn it. God damn it. Why you got to bring Tommy Rich into this?
That's what I mean, seriously, I was just watching, like, Tommy. If he's in the fucking Battle Royal next year.
Right before the pay-per-view, I was watching some Memphis Power Pro Wrestling from 1999, where Tommy Rich and Doug Gilbert were doing a promo where Doug Gilbert calls Jerry Lawler out for sleeping with 13-year-olds. And
yes.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, and Randy Hells smokes crack. And
yep.
Needless to say, they were not on the next week of Power Pro Wrestling.
Doug Gilbert cutting promos like me on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're much kinder than Doug Gilbert. I don't think you have that much hillbilly in you.
No, but seriously, did anybody? Are they going to explain why Paul Heyman isn't with Cesaro? Is that even going to be explained at this point?
Yeah, it's going to be tomorrow night, because he tweeted during the show that a picture of him on an airplane going to pick up Plan C. So he's going to.
Okay, I mean, we know Brock's coming tomorrow.
Brock is the guy for him, and Cesaro couldn't get it done. They should. I doubt it happens, but that's what they should do.
Well, let me tell you what's going to happen. Because Cesaro was my favorite guy on the roster, just like Mark Henry was my favorite guy on the roster. So what's going to happen is Brock is going to come in and beat the shit out of Cesaro on TV and destroy him about five consecutive times like he did with Mark Henry. Then he's going to come in for his two dates for the rest of the year, hold the belt till Mania, and do nothing. It's just going to fucking piss me off like the rest of the shit going on in this company right now.
That's what's going to happen. Cena's not even going to be on Raw tomorrow night. So they're going to bring Brock in there. Cena won't even be on the show. So,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Cena's filming a movie. He's filming that Apatow movie tomorrow. So he's going to be there. So next time, Brock's going to probably kill Ambrose. He'll kill Ambrose, Cesaro, and Sheamus all together. And just for you, Dylan.
It's a little bit
awesome.
It's a little bit different because this isn't the case, but to any fans who haven't been watching long enough to see a wrestling promotion actually die, this is kind of what it feels like. I mean, obviously WWE's not going anywhere, but it really does feel like a promotion that's falling apart at the seams by the week right now.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really does feel like, I mean, the dynamic is very similar to me to watching WCW or Smoky Mountain or, you know, some of the other companies in their final days, even though it's not, obviously not their final days.
You know why I would disagree with you here just a little bit? Is that the crowds are still invested. You know what I mean? The crowds are still there. WCW, man, those crowds were done. I mean, it doesn't. The booking and the stupidity of the booking feels like that. I agree with you, Charles. But the crowds are still there. They're still moving enough merchandise and enough tickets where, like, I'm not seeing that big of a decline. To me, this is like where those were like kind of like, let's slice this in half and kind of chop it off. This feels like death by a thousand tiny cuts.
Yeah.
And they go through these periods every so often where they'll have god awful television and, you know, some bad pay-per-views, and then they'll bounce back. You know, they do this quite a bit.
Yeah.
The Daniel Bryan injury has just killed them.
Yeah. But you know what, though? Hold on, though, Chris. It killed them with Daniel Bryan, yes. But it didn't kill them with the Shield. It didn't mean that you had. No. It didn't mean you had to throw Wyatt down the rabbit hole and turn him into R-Truth. Right. You know, it didn't mean that Cesaro had to become the biggest babyface of WrestleMania. You know, second to Daniel Bryan, only to become a heel the next night under Paul Heyman's tutelage. And you're going, what the fuck? You know, it didn't mean that all these young up and comers that you had to play second fiddle to these old guys again and again and again. I think that's what Charles was getting at, right? Isn't that what it feels
like? Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but and also, I mean, if Daniel Bryan was around right now, he'd be feuding with Kane and Randy Orton. So
yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I mean, so it has hurt them in the sense that they were planning on him keeping the belt warm until SummerSlam when he could lose to Brock Lesnar.
First off, just so we can kind of branch off where the company's going, let's talk about the main event here. And so, Charles, thoughts on this four-way?
Every spot that Roman Reigns has requires way too much setup from his opponent. And that's what stood out to me watching this. I don't think that he's ready to work at a main event level. The crowd is with him, but I think when he starts working singles matches that are that long, he's really going to be exposed. And I kind of worry about him in the long term. So that was my big takeaway from this more than anything else.
What did you think, Chris?
Yeah, you definitely can see it here in this type of match where he's not there yet. He's kind of like Rusev, but on a bigger stage. You know, he's supposed to be at this level, but he's not. He's kind of, and it's like Rock. Ah. He's got a lot of Rock in him from '97. You know, it's there. But the crowd is definitely with him, of course. I mean, it's funny that they were chanting "You can't wrestle with Cena" while chanting Roman Reigns.
The Roman Reigns sections were the only sections I kind of enjoyed throughout the whole match.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Will.
He's very good, but he's as overall, especially on defense. He's not there yet.
But hold on. And Chris, I'm not trying to pick on you or Charles because I disagree. Like, Charles, I understand where you're coming from. Like, and that kind of plays into the things that you've been noticing tonight, the superplex, the spots in the battle royal. You know, it's almost like the agents are trying to create special spots. But I mean, fucking Randy Orton and Kane, who have been there for what, a combined 40 years? And John Cena, who's been there, like those guys are there yet? Fucking the
crap. No,
but yeah, but John Cena doesn't have. Okay, here's a few examples of what I'm talking about. That thing where Roman Reigns like went all around like the ringside area and did that whatever that leg drop, whatever
kick, high knee.
Yeah. Like Kane was forced to sell draped over the ropes. And he was just sitting there, and Randy Orton was just sitting on the ropes. You know, like Cena was the only guy that seemed to be in a natural position for that, and the others were obviously just sitting there waiting on him to hit his spot.
One of them, Orton wasn't outside the ring? Like one
Cena
of them
was outside the ring.
Yeah, one of them, they did it where it was like on the table or something.
Yeah, and I thought that was good, but then the other two were just kind of just like laying there waiting to get hit. And then there were little things like and this wasn't so much a Roman Reigns example, it was just something else in the match that bugged me, was that Cena was doing his "you can't see me" and then like went to run the ropes to do the five knuckle shuffle, and Roman Reigns got up, but he kept running the ropes anyway, even though he clearly saw that he got up. And it was, and why did he run the ropes? Well, because he was feeding him a spot.
No, it was momentum, man. Come on. That's wrestling physics.
No, it's because he had to go somewhere so we could feed him a spot. And I hate stuff like that because they don't know how to make the setup for these spots look natural. It's just like, well, we're in this position because you have to be in this position in order to take this move. And I saw a lot of that in this match.
Well, easily the best part of the match to me was the Cena Reigns teases. I thought that was very well done. Cena was great at it, you know, whatever his expression, and you know, let's do this, you know, stuff like that. I thought that was done well. But god damn, the layout of these matches is so repetitive. And then you have the finish where he gives the AA to Kane on top of Randy Orton, which he just did. Hit Money in the Bank before he climbed up the ladder, but this time he pinned him. I mean, God.
Oh, did they do that exact same spot there?
Exactly.
Yep.
Yep.
That's
spot.
Awesome.
It's so ridiculous.
It's a callback, Chris. It's a callback. We love callbacks.
Here's the problem. Okay.
Hang up on.
Here's the problem with this shit. The problem with this shit is they're booking Cena like he's about to turn heel. Okay. They're teasing that Cena is a pussy who has to steal wins. That's what they're teasing, okay? And this is the same bullshit that they pulled when they had Rey Mysterio win that tournament for the interim belt after Punk walked out with the title in 2011. Right. Then John Cena cruise controls into a title match the same night when Rey already won the goddamn tournament, and Cena gets to beat him, and Cena looks like a fucking scumbag.
Look like a fucking douche motherfucker.
Yeah, like a horrible piece of shit, like the kind of guy you hope gets hit by a car legitimately. Like, and this asshole... Like, you can't book your top babyface like that. That's why people hate him. That, like, this whole, like, the reason that he gets the reactions he gets, and I'm not just talking about, like, the good, like, for and against reactions, but the reason that so many people cringe that he's still the top guy is because they do shit like that, where they pretend that they're teasing that he's turning heel. That's the only way to read stuff like that. And then they don't ever deliver. And I'm not even a guy who necessarily thinks Cena should turn heel, by the way. I'm just saying you can't constantly do this stupid bullshit where you tease that it's gonna happen. Reigns, I thought, I agree with you, Will, I thought his run of offense was really the highlight of the match. I don't necessarily disagree with Charles's point.
Yeah, Charles, to that point, let me interrupt Dylan. To Charles's point, a lot of that stuff to me is like that WWE fetish where everybody has to do a pose before a move. Because we saw, I mean, whether you liked Goldberg or not, sometimes, you know, against the jobber, he'd set that spear up. But a lot of times, the cool thing about Goldberg's spear is he'd hit it out of nowhere. The cool thing about Reigns doing the spear and those Shield six-man tags, he would hit it out of nowhere, right? You know?
Yeah.
Instead of doing that, let's sit in the corner like Edge with my hand up, you know, doing that stupid Edge taunt, you know, with those bug eyes. And, you know, that, or like the Superman punch hitting the mat. That's like Randy Orton having to pound the mat before he hits the RKO, or fucking Sheamus pounding his chest before the broke kick. Yeah. A lot of that shit can be fixed just by eliminating that stupid setup bullshit, you know.
Well, he's got to do Superman punch because Superman did that. That's the gimmick.
Yeah, but I really think that. If you look back and see where that actually started, that started with Shawn Michaels doing the foot stomp before he did the Sweet Chin Music. And I think that that's where that started. And because Shawn Michaels is the one who knows everything about how to work a match, everyone started that with their finish.
Well, wait a minute. Hey, let's go back even further. Ric Flair said at the figure four, always wooed and let's go to school, time to go to school. So,
yeah, but it wasn't like the same standard setup that was exactly the same, like, every single time, and whereas I think now it is. But
yeah, I agree with Charles' point. It's the whole WWE's main event style, which is definitely a Shawn Michaels invention. I'm not saying he's the sole person.
But I don't think that's a Roman Reigns thing, which was, that's why I'm kind of defending Roman Reigns.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And I think another thing you have to consider is Reigns is a guy who's primarily worked in multi-man matches. So this match, like, I think kind of showed you the positives and the weaknesses of that. The positives are that he has the most exciting spots in a match like that, because he's used to working matches like that. He worked them every night for months, and, you know, for a year or more. The negative to that is that when it is just him and another guy, I do think there are times where he definitely doesn't look ready. I agree to that point. You know, to me, I thought this was the second best match on the show, which is telling, because I didn't think this match was all that good.
Dylan, I'm with you. I enjoyed this match. I really did, especially the Reigns spots. And like what Chris said, the Cena-Reigns teases. You know?
I mean, they did. But the big takeaway from me from this match, the big takeaway was you can't keep teasing Cena's going to turn heel and or that he's a piece of shit. You just can't do that. You cannot, especially if he's not going to be on Raw next night. I didn't even realize that. That makes it even worse. You can't do that every goddamn. It's just, it makes him.
Why won't
like,
he be on Raw?
He's filming a movie.
It makes him look like an asshole. It makes him look like an asshole. And there's a difference between being the Bob Backlund-esque sort of hammy baby face that people don't like because he's too much of a nice guy. But basically he's got Bo Dallas's gimmick right now. He's a douchebag who steals. You can't do that. The only other thing of note in this match was that I thought it was really funny that Randy Orton stole a Lance Storm spot just because so appropriate.
Yes.
That he's horrific. Two of the most horrifically boring wrestlers of all time, and Randy Orton's doing a
what
tribute
spot
to
did
him.
He steal?
The rolling Boston Crab Kick.
Oh, that's okay. When then Cena runs in and does the face clamp, right? Is that the part?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But, you know, Kane being in this match also, you know, sucked the life out of it at times, too. I mean, we say this every pay-per-view supposed to now, but God damn, get him off the damn show.
but Chris, to that point, I would like Orton off every show. He's a guy who really needs to get injured. I mean, injure your thumb. I don't mean like, I'm saying just go away for 9 months. Just go away. Seriously.
Are you saying that somebody needs to give Randy Orton some cocaine so he can get a third strike?
I'm saying Chris Jericho needs to tie him up in a chair like he did to China and take a hammer to the thumb, okay, and injure his thumb. And then as Jericho's leaving, he's mysteriously going to get hit by a Hummer, and he'll be out for 9 months. And then as John Cena goes to check on Jericho, a forklift arrives and dumps John Cena. And there you go. I mean, let's get these guys out. I mean, eventually these guys have to go. They're overexposed. People are tired.
Well, you know, I said this at the last, I did this. I can't remember if I did this on the Reaction podcast, but I know I talked about this when I did a podcast with Rich from Voices of Wrestling a couple weeks back. When I said that I thought Ambrose should have won the Money in the Bank match and then cashed in immediately on Orton at the last pay-per-view, and I understand why they didn't do it. They went with a safe route. But my argument at the time was, what looks safe lots of times isn't really that safe with the benefit of hindsight. Sometimes safe is actually really stupid. It seems like a good idea, but you have to take risks sometimes. You can't constantly be in this safe mode. And it really feels like the WWE has gotten to the point now where safe is now stupid. It's no longer safe anymore in actuality. It might seem safe because they're used to these big stars and they're used to the same three or four guys or whatever, but it's now turned the corner where safe is now a synonym for idiotic. I don't see a lot of hope, because when you look at what they've done this year, you know, with the Bray Wyatt thing, losing to Cena, killed his heat, with the way they treated Ziggler, who I'm not even that high on relative to others, but they've really damaged him. With what they've done with Cesaro, they've really damaged him. I still don't agree with the Shield breakup, but if you were going to break up the Shield, they've done nothing to help Rollins, and, you know, Ambrose has gotten over. But the failure to deliver on this match, I think, is a huge negative. I think they hurt Rusev tonight by not giving him a clean win over, frankly, a mid-carder at best.
But even then, Dylan, just to interrupt that, even then, if Jack Swagger is getting good reactions and he's going to be your All-American hero, then give him an All-American win. You know what I mean? Like, and then if you know that he's not going to be the guy to beat him, then let Rusev beat him decisively. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. They just don't. Nothing looks good right now in this company. I mean, nothing. You can't. I don't like with the tag team title scene. Like, I don't mind the Wyatts not winning because I really like the Usos and I kind of like the idea of this sort of dynastic babyface tag team. But by the same token, when you look at what they've done to the Wyatts as a whole, you see that and you're like, come on, you know. And then who are the Usos even going to wrestle next? You know. So it's just. It really looks bleak. I don't see a lot of. I mean, they've got enough talented guys from a perspective of in ring, where the vast majority of pay per views are not going to be anywhere near this path. In fact, most of them are probably going to be pretty good from an in ring perspective. On average, they usually are. But when it comes to delivering and these big term storylines and angles and things like that, you know, I have no faith in this company at this point. I think this year has been an absolute disaster. An unmitigated disaster, which is incredible when you consider where this promotion was, you know, in the weeks leading to WrestleMania and at WrestleMania itself, and then you look at it now, it's mind-blowing what's happened.
Yeah, it almost feels like immediately the day after WrestleMania, they panicked. Oh, shit, Daniel Bryan's our champ, you know, and what the hell did we do, you know, when it was...
Yep.
It felt
yeah, so right, and I think right you've seen a new mindset in WWE, I think that even showed itself, you know, during the whole Daniel Bryan thing, which is that they make a plan and they want to stick to it regardless of what happens. And if fans decide that to get something else over, or, you know, if something happens unexpectedly, then that's an obstacle. That's not something that's a positive. Like, one thing that really gets me is when I read in the Wrestling Observer, like I did this past week, that Cesaro's push is being saved for a time when they feel like they need it. And I think, what exactly do you consider right now? Do you consider
right now
a time where everything is working just fine? I mean, come on. Like, so you're just putting the Cesaro push on hold until you feel like you need it? Are there all these hot things going on right now in WWE where you don't really feel the need to get someone new over? I don't get that at all.
In fact, they need multiple people over stat, man, because it's depressing right now. I mean, I'm kind of genuinely depressed about the product, especially considering that we were all excited about this after WrestleMania, considering it possibly the best WrestleMania ever. You know, oh my God, this is the youth movement we've finally been looking forward to. Cesaro won the Battle Royal, right? I didn't think Cesaro was going to win that Andre Battle Royal. You know, everybody's kind of pissed off about the Bray Wyatt thing at Mania, but it's okay. Daniel Bryan won. You know, they're still going with the youth and the Shield were hot. And now it just feels like they're just fucking with people, man. You know, I know we joke because I thought that the show was in Charlotte. You know, shout out to Paul Stanley. But it really felt like they were trying to kill that town and make that town never want to watch wrestling again with these finishes tonight.
You know, and I think that there's something in the wrestling climate that's changed, which is – and this – I'm going to say this – I mean, this is a point that Jim Ross has made, but I'm going to try to say it in a less – hopefully a less obnoxious faction, which is that
good luck.
There aren't as many heels anymore, any strong heels like there used to be. And I think what happens is that if the fans are entertained by someone, whether it's because they're a good worker or because they like their gimmick or whatever the case is, fans are pretty much turning everyone babyface that has any talent.
Exactly.
And so I don't think WWE has figured out how to navigate that yet, because then the end result is that they have this hugely lopsided roster where they have all of these baby faces. Like, it was even happening to Wade Barrett before he left. We've seen it happening to Bray Wyatt in the last few months.
One guy.
Yeah.
One guy does.
That's
Bruce
right.
Him.
No.
And you know why that is.
The one guy that could make it work, though, Chris, is Cena. Cena would be huge as a heel. You fucking love it. But yeah, Rusev, you're right. You're right. They are doing a good job with Rusev.
I just feel like if they're going to build up Roman Reigns as the new top babyface, that's another problem they're going to run into, is that they really need an assembly line of strong heels. And I don't know how they're going to produce those when fans keep turning everyone that they think is good babyface.
What do you think about that, Dylan?
That's actually a very good point. You know, it scares me because it makes me think that Bo Dallas might get a main event push, though. because a guy whose gimmick is that his literal gimmick is that he sucks, but he thinks he's good. And he actually does suck. That's a scary thought. But I don't know how you get around it. They just have a lot of problems. And I don't see how they're going to solve them. And I tell you what's not the answer, okay? What's not the answer is an overpaid guy who's never drawn a dime in the wrestling business, who's got a work, like coming in for 3 dates a year to supposedly pop stuff. I mean, that's not going to cut it. They're going to have to do better. And I like Brock as a worker. I like Brock as a worker, okay? And his match with Cena is one of my favorite matches ever. And he had a lot of matches in his first run I really liked. But they paid this guy a lot of money that he clearly was not worth. And you could say, oh, he popped some pay-per-view. Well, yeah, so did fucking Mark Henry and Ryback. What's your point? And those guys aren't worth nearly as much money. They don't cost nearly as much as him.
Those could be two of the greatest heels on the roster right now.
That's right.
You know, Charles's point, if they would have just protected him a little bit.
He's a huge waste of money. It doesn't help. He's not around enough to justify what they're doing with him. And what you end up with is the scenario they're in now where everybody waits around for the matches involving the real stars. Well, we're going to wait around till Brock Lesnar has another match. Or we're going to wait around till Batista has another match. Or we're going to wait around until WrestleMania season for The Undertaker to come back. That's a big problem. You know, that's another problem that often I think doesn't get explored is when you constantly have your big shows, like at WrestleMania this year, as good of a show as I thought it was, when you've got all these part-timers and half-timers and things like that in matches, and then you throw all your really good undercard talent in a meaningless battle royal, what does that say about your booking? Well, I'll tell you what it says. You fucking suck.
Yeah, you're actively promoting the message that things aren't as good as they used to be, which even if that's true, why promote that?
Yes, it's completely insane. So, if they're putting all their eggs in the Brock Lesnar basket, or God forbid the Triple H basket, that's not gonna work. I mean, I really don't think it's gonna work. I hope I'm wrong.
I'm expecting Undertaker not to wrestle at Night of Champions, but I'm expecting Undertaker to be involved somehow, like maybe handcuffed to Paul Heyman or something like that, just because I can't think of anything else that they could do that would make the show bigger than normal with the current roster. And it's not the fault of the current roster. It's because of the way that everyone has been presented.
Night of Champions or SummerSlam?
Night of Champions, because that's the show that they're loading up. Night of Champions is when all the first round network subscriptions start expiring.
Oh, okay.
So that's actually going to be promoted as a bigger show than SummerSlam this year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like, I never thought of that pay-per-view as like one of the top four or top three, or, you know, I guess so. Hey.
It's not. It's just because of the schedule with subscriptions.
So what's the SummerSlam lineup supposed to look like? I know, Charles, you and Chris are Observer subscribers. I guess, Dylan, you are too. What are they loading up for next month? Are just a bunch of rematches from this month?
They've talked about Cena Brock. They've talked about Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns, because they were going to do Triple H Roman Reigns, but then supposedly that match is going to be held off until Night of Champions.
Because everybody's clamoring for it, right?
Yeah. Because they're trying to load up Night of
Champions. And there's a championship in the match.
But I haven't heard anything else. I'm expecting the rest of the show to just be matches or rematches from Battleground.
Oh, okay. That sounds really exciting.
It'll be Bray versus Jericho again. I can't wait for that. Another classic in that series. We'll probably actually get a Seth Rollins Dean Ambrose match. But here's the thing: I don't trust them to actually deliver it. And I would encourage no fan to trust them. And I would encourage every fan to do what they can to get this show by any means they can. You can't trust they're going to deliver what they promise. So, I mean, I guess you can trust that it's ultimately they're going to, you know, you're going to get a fucking Kane match. But other than that, you can't trust that they're going to deliver what they promise. So who the hell knows? You know, I don't have any faith in this company. Well, I'll tell you what, Daniel Bryan being gone, and I think being gone possibly for a really long time.
If not for good, you know, there's a realistic chance he's wrestled his last match. Yeah,
and that, you know, that's going to change a lot. That changes a lot of things too, because he was the sort of the figurehead behind a lot of the fan responses and sort of the changing perception and whatnot. And with him gone, you know, I think Ambrose has kind of stepped into that role, but I'm not sure the company, I just can't see them. I can't see them doing the same thing again. So my concern is that what we're going to see is a lot of slowly over the course of time, a lot of more disinterested crowds, a lot of crowds that are really detached from what they're getting. Yeah, and I could be totally wrong on that, but that's a concern I have based on, you know, what they've done with a lot of those other guys who were sort of representative of the same things that Brian was representative of.
Well, they chanted Woman Night in the main event. There was loud Daniel Bryan chants and loud Yes chants, you know, in the middle of the match. So, yeah, it's there. They still know him.
No, of course they know him, and if he came back, he'd be the most over guy on the roster by far. But you can't rely on that. Now it's time to build new stars. It's time to push this youth thing. I almost wish, like I said, like I hate being mean to the old guys because I think you need veterans around, but I wish they would just get fucking hurt or tired or pissed off like Punk and leave. I mean, really. I mean,
this podcast has got me encouraging people to steal. Charles giving fashion tips, fucking Will, you know, hoping people get crippled. I understand your point. I get your point. I do. I understand what you're saying. But you know what's funny? You know, when Punk left, I didn't care, and I was kind of happy because I think he didn't care anymore, and I think it was obvious. But now it's like, God. You know, it's funny, during that whole period where everybody wanted Punk to come back, I didn't want Punk to come back, and now I'm like, God, I kind of wish Punk would come back. Just because it's so fucking shitty. There's nobody, I don't know.
Yeah, Sami Zayn, I feel bad for, because he's probably just, because I'm sure that his future depends on Daniel Bryan's future. They really don't need another, like, likable, pale super worker babyface if Daniel Bryan's coming back. But if he's not, then why aren't they calling Sami Zayn up to the main roster?
And here's a revolutionary concept. More than two people can be over at once. Holy shit. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's just mind-boggling how this works. Anyway, guys, I think this was a great 2 hours. Dylan got to vent and get all that pressure out of his system. You know? Charles, I hope you join us again, man. For, you know, we got to have some more fashion tips, man. Just for diva costumes alone. We'll say that as the diva fashionista or something. And then, seriously, loved having you on the show, Zellner. Of course, I know you'll be here next month. And I'm interested in SummerSlam. I'm kind of interested in a car crash kind of way, not like I'm excited for SummerSlam kind of way. It just feels that way. It feels like, man, this is going to be such a car wreck, you know? So, well, we'll see how it goes. But, fellas, I want to thank y'all for taking time out to do the show, and for everyone else who listened, appreciate it. Until next pay-per-view, we'll see you then. Bye-bye. I watch as you get worse. My script is to the letter, and I'll write your final verse.
see new life unfold. Each second I burn brighter, your fire is going cold. You could try to beg for mercy, go ahead and try to run. No escape and no redemption, understand.